Aloha! You are listening to Inside the Desert Oasis Room, episode number 83. This episode is sponsored by Tandawai Rum. Since 1854, Tandawai Distillers has been producing quality rum from the Philippines. The indisputable history of their Philippine rum is the foundation of which the Tandawai legacy continues today. Tandawai Asian Rum is made with premium varieties of heirloom sugarcane grown in the Visayas region of the tropical island of the Philippines. It is the same Southeast Asian vintage canes that has been cultivated for centuries in the tropical maritime climate and rich Philippine soil, which makes Tandawai Asian Rum distinctly Filipino. Tandawai Rum also has lots of history in the tropical exotic cocktail era when it first began with Don the Beachcomber and his Filipino barmen in the 1930s. There's evidence that these legendary bartenders created some of the first tropical cocktail recipes using Tandawai Rum. For more information, go to TandawaiUSA.com or stop by Tandawai USA's Facebook page. This podcast is also sponsored by the Tonga Hut. Opened in 1958, the Tonga Hut in North Hollywood is LA's oldest continuously run tiki bar. With locations in both North Hollywood and Palm Springs, California, the Tonga Hut serves classic tiki cocktails in a classic tiki setting. Dine in a secret tiki hideaway or learn about rum and rum history at one of their educational seminars. And if you're up to the challenge, take the journey to join the Loyal Order of Drooling Bastards. For information on events, Rum Rum Club, and more, go to TongaHut.com or find them on Facebook or Instagram. On this episode, we chat with the lovely Violetta Beretta. Violetta is a burlesque performer, producer, director, and dancer from the Hawaiian island of Oahu. We chat about living in Hawaii, the history of burlesque in Hawaii, Don Tiki, and answer some fun, thought-provoking questions that I guarantee you'll be answering yourself as you listen along. As always, I hope you enjoy listening to this episode as much as we did bringing it to you. And if you did, hit that subscribe button. The podcast is free and subscribing makes it easier for you to follow our adventures. Shares on your social media are always appreciated. And if you'd like to help support the show, go to DesertOasisRoom.com and click on the donate button. Every donation, no matter the size, helps keep this podcast coming to you every week. Okay, here she is, Hawaii's burlesque sweetheart, Miss Violetta Beretta. Violetta, aloha.
Aloha, how are you?
I'm doing good, how are you?
Good, it's a beautiful day here as always, so I'm always very lucky to be in Hawaii.
Yeah, you're living in Hawaii, so of course life is good.
Yeah, never any complaints. Or if we have them, we just keep them to ourselves because no one wants
to hear it. Right?
They're like, oh, poor you. Right. Did you ever see, Triumph, the insult comic dog?
Yeah, he's hilarious.
It makes me laugh so hard when he did that weather report because it's just like,
that's funny. Yeah, I love him.
Yeah.
He's a crack up. Well, thanks for joining the podcast.
Yeah. Yeah.
I appreciate it so much.
No problem. I appreciate you asking me. This is my very first podcast.
Oh, is it really? I can't believe that.
You know, I'm actually a compulsive liar as well. So you'll have to go back and fact check every single thing that I say today.
Thanks for that.
So I joined the circus when I was 5. No.
Good to know. Yeah. Good to know. Yeah. So how's everything in Hawaii right now? What's the weather like over there?
Oh, beautiful. I cannot give you an exact temperature, but I'm guessing it's hovering anywhere between probably the high 70s and the low 80s as it is almost every single day.
So it's perfect, in other words.
Perfect.
You know, the first time I'm very
lucky to be here.
Yeah, yeah. The first time I went there to Hawaii, this was like a good 25 years ago. I remember it being so humid and I thought to myself, oh my God, how can people live here? This is so uncomfortable. But I got used to it within like the first day or two. And then I didn't want to leave.
Yeah. You know, that's a problem for us actually. People not wanting to leave. We're like, guys, got to go home eventually. Yeah. No, I joke. But I do think, you know, it's people can acclimate, especially if it's pleasant acclimation. But I've also had, you know, similar experiences, travel. I mean, honestly, when it gets down below maybe 67,
uh-huh.
it's time for me to get the multiple sweaters and, like,
right.
I'm freezing. So I call myself, like, a delicate tropical blossom because
of
basically
course.
I need that, like, you know, 70, 80, and then I'm good. But, yeah, I mean, it can be some, you know, it can be a little bit to get over, but when you're at the beach and everything's gorgeous, you're kind of like, hey, you know, a little bit of humidity is not bad. Plus, you don't have to wear very many clothes here, so that's also...
Yeah. Well, you know, the time that I went, when I experienced all that humidity, it hasn't been like that since I've, you know, on all the trips that I've gone back for... I haven't felt that same humidity that I did that very first time. So either I got used to it or it was just an anomaly for that particular visit.
Yeah, you know, maybe. I think that our hurricane season, though, sometimes it can get a little bit muggy. And maybe that's probably what you were... Do you remember when you were here around?
No, that was... That very first time was in September back in the early... Geez, actually... late 80s maybe. So I was gonna say early 90s, but late 80s. It was a long time ago. But
how old were you around then, if you don't mind my asking?
Yeah, I was in my early 20s. So
okay.
Gonna be 50 years old this year. I'm older than I look. So
you know, remarkably well preserved.
It's all the rum.
You can give me my $5 later. That's what I always tell people to give me the age. I'm like, hey, you know what? Just I'll give you your $5 later. Thanks for carding me for that drink. Well, you know, I was going to say, it's like Hawaii in the 80s is also an extremely different place than, you know, Hawaii now. Growing up here, you know, I was born and raised here, and I've been other places, but just...
Now,
my heart is in Hawaii, so, you know, I continue to stay.
You're in Oahu, right?
In Oahu, uh-huh.
And
in
so
Honolulu.
have you always been in Oahu?
Yeah, well, I have family on the Outer Islands and things.
Okay.
So I've been, you know, back and forth. I have ties on Kauai and over on Maui as well.
Okay.
But yeah, it seems like, you know, if you're a younger person and you're trying to get stuff done, Honolulu is the place for you because
it
has the majority of the jobs and most of the things going on. So yeah, I have been in Honolulu for a very, very long time, and I make that sound as if I am an ancient creature that has just emerged from the depths. But no, yeah, born and raised and been here for quite a while. But yeah, like I was saying, it's very different than even it was in the 80s.
Yeah.
In some very positive ways, and then in others, you know, not so great. But I suspect that's, you know, anyone could say that about their hometown.
Sure.
Sense, you know?
Well, it changes like every... I've noticed like every maybe 5 to 10 years, it's completely different, you know? And
Yeah.
You know, I spend a lot of time in Kauai, and...
Okay.
One of the locals was saying to me, you know, there's a million people on Oahu now. That's crazy to me that there's traffic all the time now on the freeway.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's just, you know, I can imagine, you know, why people want to be there because it's paradise. But
sure,
you know, how many people can that island hold?
yeah, and you know, there is a term in the planning community and other sorts of communities, which is called, you know, carrying capacity, and it's something that this is like a very governmental lecture, sort of boring. Sorry, but basically the concept is, you know, how many people can one place hold. And so that is, you know, becoming a very important question in Hawaii. And as someone who, you know, family's been here for many, many generations, and I am native Hawaiian, I do see a lot of just the explosive growth can
sure.
be very hard to manage. Like, you know, housing here for us is an issue. We have a lot of homeless problems.
Yeah.
You know, but that, you know, that can be the darker side of that. And that's not to get, you know, mired down in despairing sort of stuff, but these are definitely things that, you know, need to be looked at and corrected. But the sun continues to shine.
Yeah,
and there's
yeah.
still, you know, so many great things. We have a lot of really cool Hawaiian cultural things happening with a really big revival in, you know, Olelo Hawaii, especially like immersion schools where mm-hmm. they're teaching a lot of Native Hawaiian children how to speak and write and do, you
I
know,
love
most
that.
Of their practical life.
Yeah,
I believe... I think they've graduated a few classes at this point already. So it's becoming a, you know, a lot of, I'm not qualified to speak extensively on this, but I know that it has been something that has surged in popularity and has been really good for helping to preserve, you know, the language and the culture.
Do you speak any Native Hawaiian?
Do I speak Hawaiian? You know, I am not a fluent speaker.
Okay.
People here in Hawaii growing up will kind of pepper their everyday language with either Pidgin English, which is
sure.
Known as Hawaii Creole English, if you're going to get academic about it, or with actual Hawaiian words that, you know, you just kind of say, like if you're done doing something in Hawaii, you say,
mm-hmm.
I'm pau.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone here says, you know, mahalos or mahals or
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
whatever, that kind of thing. So it is sort of intertwined in the local patois day-to-day conversation here. And in that respect, I definitely do. My family does. And, you know, there are, I know certain phrases and different things.
Mm-hmm.
But that said, I would certainly love to know more and think it's important that, you know, the kids are being taught.
Yeah, yeah,
especially.
For sure.
Yeah.
I saw something on TV where they were showing kids, young kids, they were like 4, 5, 6 years old, speaking fluent Hawaiian. And
uh-huh.
it was the coolest thing because...
It's beautiful to hear.
Yeah.
It's really beautiful to hear.
It totally is.
Yeah.
Let me
turn the tables on you. Like, what was your first experience with Hawaii only? What was your... favorite thing about it? Like, what keeps drawing you back to the islands?
Okay. I appreciate you asking me that, first of all. Well, you know, here's the thing. I was born in the Philippines. And
okay.
I came here when I was... Came to the mainland, I should say, when I was 3 years old. I mentioned earlier, I'm going to be 50 years old this year. So I spent my whole life in Southern California. But
okay.
we were talking about cold weather. And, you know, I think 2 weekends ago, I was in Kansas City. I think it was 2 weekends ago. It was snowing out there. And, of course, I complained about it being from Southern California. But even in Southern California, if the weather dips below 65, you know,
mm-hmm.
I start complaining about that. And I know it sounds
yeah.
like real sissy-like, but the thing is that, you know, I think my DNA is just... You know, I've got dark skin. I came from a tropical island. It's got to be warm
Setting.
And humid for me. It's got to be warm,
yeah.
right? And
No.
Hawaii just feels like home to me, you know? So I go there and I just feel like I belong there, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know
yeah.
if it's the culture, the lifestyle, a combination of both, you know,
uh-huh.
the beautiful surroundings, the people, the warmth. You know, in more ways than one.
I know, what's not to like, right?
Yeah, seriously.
Basically everything you said and more. Well, you know, this is definitely not scientific, but I think I do remember reading a study about, you know, kind of the first few months of where you're born, your body's general settings sort of acclimate to, and
mm-hmm.
you kind of feel the most comfortable in that environment. I don't know how, you know, true that is, but I know for myself that I definitely do not belong in Minnesota.
Oh,
in
neither do I.
No. Yeah. Well, that's neat. Like, that's really neat that...
Yeah.
I think a lot of people kind of experience a feeling of almost like, have I been here before or I've
right.
come
now,
home?
Let me ask you,
know.
This. Do you ever get island
yeah.
fever, though? Do you ever feel like you want to see more? Yeah, okay.
Of course. I think a lot of, especially young people, and that can be, you know, it's a blessing and a curse, I always say. Like, it's
sure.
a really interesting phenomenon because in order to make your way and your fortune in Hawaii when you're younger, typically you have to actually leave and go to the mainland or someplace else to try to establish yourself just because of the scarcity of things. And, you know, so I think a lot of people will leave and then come back in their retirement. And the few people that stay and try to, you know, eke out a living here definitely, I think, have a burning desire every few months to, like, get off the island, myself included. I have not been traveling as much, mostly because of the Hawaii Burlesque Festival, although I would love to. I see so many great burlesque festivals out there. I know that the Hollywood Burlesque Festival is one that I've always wanted to do, which is run by Lily Von Stoop, and that one seems great. I mean, there's just so many that look incredible. But you know, I got to stay here and I got to try and get mine together. So that sort of prevented me from doing as much traveling as I would like. But in the past, you know, I've definitely gone a lot of different places and had a great time, you know.
You know, I'm curious about how you got started in burlesque there in Hawaii, because that doesn't sound like or seem like the kind of place that's a hotbed for burlesque. So am I wrong about that?
You know, you are wrong, and I just love being able to say that to somebody.
Okay.
You're just wrong. No, I'm joking.
I hear it a lot.
I actually don't. Do you?
Well, I am married.
Questions about that.
I am married with two children, so I'm told I'm wrong a lot. So.
I just did a rim shot for you there. You know, yes, I will say you are wrong.
Okay.
But it's not that I don't think it's anything that anyone who wasn't a sailor in maybe the 40s or 50s wouldn't be familiar with, or people who didn't, you know, grow up here. Basically, two-part answer. I got my start in burlesque by seeing the very beginnings of a burlesque troupe that was started by a woman named Megan Mayhem. And so it was her idea to form something called Cherry Blossom Cabaret. I saw a show of theirs and I was like, oh, this is great. I'm a trained dancer and I've been doing all kinds of stuff for most of my life. But when I saw burlesque, I realized that it was exactly what I was looking for in the sense of being able to have complete creative freedom. You know, when you are a paid or company dancer, you have to do people's choreography. You have to wear the costumes that they tell you to. You have to, you know, express what they want you to on stage. But with burlesque, it essentially turns into a one-person show. Mm-hmm. And so whatever story you want to tell, you can tell. And I loved the freedom of that and thought it was just really, really interesting. And I kind of define that more along the lines of neo-burlesque versus the classic burlesque, which I still love and think is, you know, beautiful. But I think that the attraction that I felt initially was more along the lines of like, wow, you know, I can just, if I want to jump out of a giant top hat or do break dancing or, you know, anything, I can do this on stage and I can tell the story of, you know, what I want to tell. So that's how I got my start. And it's just been, you know, a great journey since then. And then the second part is, yeah, in fact, burlesque was fairly popular. I'm going to give you like a short history lesson now.
Yeah, please.
Tell me how much time I have before you.
You have as much time as you would like.
Okay. Hit the snooze button and five. No, actually, this is actually extremely fascinating for anybody who likes burlesque or kind of the World War II era stuff. After my initial interest in burlesque, I kind of started to poke around and do a little bit of research as to like what we had out here. And I ended up discovering that there was a man, in Honolulu named Jack Sione, who was kind of known as Hawaii's nightlife empresario for a certain point. And he had come out to Hawaii from, I believe it was like Phoenix, had a, you know, background in performance and stuff. And ended up basically kind of making Hawaii a sort of stop on a burlesque, a spoke on the burlesque wheel, the circuit. And so he would bring these burlesque girls out, put them up and then have them perform in the various clubs that he owned throughout town.
Okay.
And these were bigger name acts. So we had people like Louis St. Cyr. Who else? Oh, boy. Tura Satana. A couple of others whose names I'll remember in a little while.
Okay.
But basically, everyone from that era of the bigger names, the legends, burlesque legends, made a stop out in Honolulu at some point. A lot of the time, I think it was just appealing because they wanted to have a vacation and they would get paid and just, you know,
sure,
fun. So they'd hang out, you know, for a few months and do that. So as I kind of went along in my research, I found this guy, Jack Sayo, and I was like, wow, this is incredible. You know, people either don't know this because they're of a younger generation, or the older people are a little more reticent to discuss it, perhaps because of a generational thing, mm-hmm. or just have mm-hmm. forgotten, you know. So when I began to dredge this all up, it was fascinating, not only for myself, but for people in my troupe, and just like, wow, you guys, we have like a burlesque legacy.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to stalk, and this is kind of a creepy story, not as creepy as it sounds when I say it's creepy, but so basically I surmised eventually that Jack Sayon was indeed still alive and kicking.
Oh, wow.
And so I set out on this mission to find him.
Okay.
And it took me actually a few years, I think, because he was, you know, it took me about a year to finally get in touch with him. And then a little while longer, because I think he might have just been like, who's this crazy girl that's like calling me and, you know, asking me all about, you know, all this stuff. So after, you know, a little bit of like phone stalking and just sort of like random begging on his answering machine of like, you know, I just would love to just talk to you.
Uh-huh.
He finally called me back. And so we ended up meeting. He shared a lot of really amazing pictures and
how
news
cool
articles.
Is that? Wow.
He still has all of his costumes from, you know, all these productions that he would put on.
Uh-huh.
And I basically ended up becoming his friend. And so now we occasionally have lunch and collaborate. And we had a couple of years back at the festival a little talk about burlesque and, you know, just sort of an intro to what it was and a few historical mm-hmm. points. And then he did a little bit of a panel. People were able to talk to him about his, you know, experiences and whatever. And this guy is just, wow.
He's a walking historian.
He's a walking historian. He's hilarious, but he also just says whatever he's thinking.
Have you ever thought about, I mean, like, you should be documenting all the stuff that he's telling you.
Yes, yes. And as a matter of fact, that was, you know, that sort of became a project. But he did also work with a few people to write his memoirs, which mm-hmm. he has since published.
Okay.
And, you know, I believe sells himself. I don't actually have the information on, you know, how to get that. But if you look up, you know, Jack Sayon, Honolulu, you may be able to find it. It's a great read. Very, very interesting. Doesn't really delve too deep into the burlesque part, but there's definitely stuff in there. But it did spark in me this desire to basically, like you said, archive and document. So I did end up photographing almost all of his scrapbooks and, you know, printed material.
Oh, cool.
And then recording almost everything that, you know, all the stories that he told, I have recordings of.
Oh, awesome.
I have a lot of his old scripts and audio and, you know, different things like that. So I was able to get as much as I could, and still, you know, we could still always get more.
Yeah,
He also travels quite a bit. He's actually a man about town, and usually goes to Beehoff. So you may, if you're in the burlesque world, and I'm sure you probably have already, see him there.
You know, I am kind of on the outer fringe of the burlesque world because I see it in a lot of the tiki events that I go to,
mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
that's really where the crossover is for me, you know. And I have to be honest, you know, I really wasn't aware of this whole scene prior to me seeing it in tiki, right?
Sure.
And of course, it was something that I found interesting because a lot of what we're doing with this tiki world is we are kind of recreating what our parents enjoyed. Right. And when I look at the burlesque scene today, it's almost kind of that same thing today, sure. So kind of recreating, you know, this art form that existed many decades
ago. Well, they're very, you know, complementary to each other, not only in terms of the era and the, mm-hmm. you know, all the accoutrement, the different looks and things, but I do think that subcultures are smart in the sense that it seems like if they do share at least some sort of similarity, mm-hmm. that they group themselves together, because some subcultures are, you know, smaller, and if people in these different subcultures kind of get together with each other, it sort of helps to not only grow awareness of, you know, what the thing they came for is, but also other things that are like, hey, wow, you know, this actually goes really well with this and I like it. And then by default, they begin to enjoy burlesque, or burlesque people then by default begin to enjoy exotica. So right, I think there's right. that sort of like interesting marriage, you know, between the two. And I've seen the same with the rockabilly scene, or now it almost, the fascinating thing is that burlesque seems to be tailoring itself to each sort of subculture that it wants to complement.
Okay.
So for instance, now there's nerdlesque, now there's metalesque,
right.
now there's boylesque,
yeah.
you know, and so they're all sort of taking the subculture and creating this complementary umbrella over
right.
it. A burlesque umbrella. There we go.
So I have a couple of questions in relation
yeah.
to that. Actually, one of them you kind of just answered. So one of the questions I was going to ask was, how is it different today than it was before, you know, way back in the olden days? And I think you kind of just answered that, how it tailors to these different subcultures.
Yeah.
And then also, how is it different on the mainland as it is in Hawaii? Because again, you know, until that you've just given me this history, I never envisioned Hawaii as a place for even having any kind of burlesque. And I was obviously
sure,
wrong
sure,
about that.
Sure.
But, you know, does it make it different there because it's so detached from the mainland? Or am I also wrong about that?
Well, you know, it is different. It's not just a completely different animal. But there are just different considerations. I mean, basically, you know, we are the most isolated place on Earth in geographic terms. And so our access to things is extremely limited
mm-hmm.
or extremely expensive. So, you know, when I lived in Portland briefly, if I decided that I wanted to do a carousel circus act, I could plausibly go out, find myself a carousel horse, mm-hmm. buy it for not so, I mean, you know, what in as much as what a carousel horse would cost
mm-hmm.
and take it home. This is something I actually ended up doing. And I think the thing was about like $50 on Craigslist.
Mm-hmm.
That's just something that will never happen in Hawaii.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
that is where I think I give, you know, performers here, producers, just anyone who's doing anything, basically, a lot of respect, is that here you really have to make your own. I mean,
yeah,
we
yeah.
can, you know, we can get things online and, you know, different stuff, but the creativity and inventiveness that comes out of people because of the limited access that they have to just even materials or props or sets or, you know, whatever, be it because of geography or financing, it can actually really breed a lot of genius ideas and things that I'm like, wow, you know, I never would have thought of that.
Yeah.
So I think that's a, you know, that's a very big difference. Obviously, you know, the expense, I think, can be a big thing here because, you know, production, I think, can be a very risky thing. So people are a little maybe, I wouldn't say reticent, but I just think it maybe can come with a lot more of a, you know, a risk. Because, like, you know, the festival that I produce in Hawaii, here in Hawaii, where mm-hmm. I am, it's not the same as a mainland festival in the sense that when I have a featured act, you know, I will have to fly them out. I will have to put them up.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, you know, the airfare, we'll just talk about alone, you know, that's, say they're coming from the East Coast.
Wow.
That's a good chunk of money already.
Wow, hadn't thought about any of that.
Then when we talk about lodging, you know, lodging is it's not the same as anywhere else because everyone wants to be here. So, you know, the minimum amount of money you can pay for a room here, we'll say, is about $150, and that's on the low end, you know? So once you start doing the budget for things like that, it can become prohibitive, and I can see how, you know, people who have greater access or just cheaper flights, it's like you can have multiple features. You can bring in a ton of things and people because you have a lot more money to work with.
Sure.
So, you know, we're not broke out here, but it is definitely something that I think people do consider when they start to dream of like, oh, I would love to, you know, have this or that. It's a lot more work. And I'm not saying more in a competitive way, but I just think in the way of like,
yeah, it's certainly logistically more challenging.
And logistics. Yeah. So I think those are probably the biggest differential, but we have a lot of talent. There's a lot of great people who are doing things here in the state, and we even have burlesque troupes on the Outer Islands as well.
Mm-hmm.
We have the Kit Kat Club Cabaret, which is in Maui, and I know there are performers on Kauai as well, I believe. I think there used to be a group there called Black Coral Burlesque, but I'm not certain about that, so don't quote me.
Interesting.
I know.
Yeah.
If you have a product, service, or event that you'd like to bring attention to, we can help. Imagine hearing your ad in this spot, just like you're hearing this one right now. Sponsor an episode and get the exposure you deserve. For more information, go to DesertOasisRoom.com and click on Services. This episode is sponsored by Jason's Tiki Adventures. Follow tiki enthusiast and master thrift hunter Jason T. Smith as he travels the country discussing and reviewing the good and the bad of tiki in America. Watch Jason's Tiki Adventures on the Jason T. Smith channel on YouTube every Friday at 7 p.m. Pacific time.
So you said something about being creative, and I have to tell you, one of the costumes that you've worn before that's actually probably my most favorite costume that you've worn was the Hula Girl lamp. And
oh, thank you so much.
And when I saw that, I thought, well, now that's creative. How cool is that, right? It's like a life-size Hula Girl. And, you know, as a collector of Tiki and Hawaiiana, I instantly recognized the costume. And if I remember correctly, you wore that. I think you did a performance at Tiki Oasis with that costume. And then you also did a performance with Don Tiki with that costume. Am I correct about that?
Yeah, totally.
They were one of the earlier acts for me in this, you know, Tiki revival scene. They were certainly different, you know, and coming from Hawaii, they seem to be a little unorthodox for me.
Sure.
How was your involvement with them, and how did that get started?
Well, I was not there from the beginning. I actually came in a couple of years after they had been doing their, I believe it was the Hawaiian Hut shows, or they had been doing a lot of larger scale shows. Larger scale shows in the state. And they had a great troupe of dancers, Polynesian dancers, and a couple of other people that were involved. And I think that, you know, people had to leave. I think people moved. And you know how bands are, especially large bands.
Oh, like, sure. Yeah.
People end up going places and different things like that. So at a certain point in time, they were looking for more dancers. And I had known the pianist and kind of like musical arranger Kit Eversball from having a random blues band. So when I
that's interesting.
When I was talking to him, he kind of mentioned, you know, something about it, and then ended up approaching my burlesque troupe, Cherry Blossom Cabaret, to see if we would join them for a show, kind of like a corporate event that they ended up needing dancers for. So it was kind of like a one-off, you know? And after that, we enjoyed working together so much that they were like, hey, you know, why don't you join as a dancer and sometime vocalist? And so basically, it ended up being Delmar DeWild, mm-hmm. who was the lead singer, and then Sherry Xiaoling, who was a vocalist mm-hmm. and sometimes dancer, and myself, along with Lopaka and Abe Lagrimas and Hejan and all the just amazing players, Frank Oral. And then we were a little bit leaner, and then I think that was around the time that we came up to, I'm confused. We did a tour. We did a West Coast tour that was just super fun.
Yeah.
And then we came to Tiki Oasis.
Yeah.
So that was the group that was, there for that. And I just had so much fun with those guys. Love them all. They're all just great, great people. But you're right. They are a little bit unusual for Hawaii in that Tiki itself is actually not such a big thing here.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I feel like their popularity actually has a lot more, there's a lot more opportunity and popularity in the mainland or like places like, ironically, Germany, where they went for a big tiki festival there.
Wow.
So
that's interesting.
Yeah,
did you travel there?
Really,
did you travel with them when you went to Germany?
No, I did not. This is before my time.
Okay.
But sounded like, this is, just imagine an 11-piece, I don't even know, probably like 11 to 13 piece band with dancers all from Hawaii landing somewhere in the middle of Germany.
Yeah, that's certainly
crazy.
Different.
Yeah. So, but I think they had a really good time.
Yeah.
So yeah, we had a lot of fun performing. Delmar DeWild was probably one of my most favorite people to work with, just a great, amazing singer and character. Sherry as well,
Now, are you still performing with them?
Yes. Everyone's been kind of on a hiatus.
Okay.
But every once in a while, there will be little stirrings of, hey, want to do this or that. So we don't have anything on the calendar as far as I know right now. But everyone is still, active in their other. A lot of these people also work within other bands.
Sure.
I think
just like and, all musicians, right? They work in multiple bands.
Yeah.
Exactly. They do all kinds of stuff.
Lopaka plays in like every band here ever.
Sure.
So yeah.
Sure. Yeah, I love that Hula Girl lamp costume. And
oh, thank you so much.
Yeah,
it's funny because I've traveled all around, and with that, usually to perform. And if I had $5 for, every guy in the airport that I wrap the lampshade itself up,
mm-hmm.
but it's still very obvious, what it is. Like anyone who's just come up to me and been like, can I turn you on? And I'm like,
you're not the first guy who said
like
that.
I have sympathy for tall people now because it's like, I kind of know in my own weird way what it's like to get asked if you play basketball every day.
Well, yeah.
I don't.
I have to admit that I'm very guilty of teasing Doug Horn about his height. And props to Doug for being such a good sport about it. He always laughs and he never gets pissed off or annoyed at me. So shout out to Doug Horn for that. He's always been a good sport and he's such a friendly guy. So
what a good guy.
Yeah.
He's probably like secretly doing.
Oh yeah. Yeah. He's,
I don't know.
Yeah.
He's plotting his revenge.
Yeah, totally.
He'll just be dangling things over your head for like the next few years. Like,
I would, right? I'd do it if I could, if somebody kept making those same stupid tall jokes to me.
So would I.
Thanks for listening to Inside the Desert Oasis Room. This is the BG Reynolds recipe of the day. The Test Pilot. 1/2 ounce lime juice, 1/2 ounce BG Reynolds Falernum, 1/2 ounce triple sec, 3/4 ounce light rum, 1.5 ounces of dark rum, a dash of Angostura bitters, and a dash of absinthe. Shake with crushed ice, then pour into a double old-fashioned glass. Add more crushed ice to fill. Garnish with a wooden oyster fork with maraschino cherry skewered on prongs. Be sure to use BG Reynolds syrups, trusted by the world's top tiki bars for great cocktails with every pour. Save the mess and buy the best. BG Reynolds, available at bgreynolds.com and now on Amazon.
So I want to get to know you outside of your burlesque stuff, because, you know, really that's all I know you for, is I know you as a burlesque dancer and I don't know anything else about you. So I want to ask you a few other fun questions to see if I can get to know Miss Violetta Beretta a little bit more outside of a burlesque personality.
Sure. Sure. I am an enigma wrapped in a mystery, but I will do my best.
Okay. So
to answer some of your questions.
So let me start by asking you, do you have any other interests? Do you have like hobbies or other things that you do that might surprise our listeners?
You know, see, this is how I know you don't know me well, because this is just such a great opportunity for me to say the most awful things that I can come up with. But no, I will be serious, because I want you to like me. So
I already like you. Yeah, you can say whatever you want.
Oh, okay. Let's see. What's terrible? No. I have a lot of different interests. I love, you know, dancing, all kinds of dance, and have been dancing most of my life.
Mm-hmm.
So I, you know, when I'm not doing burlesque, I definitely dance a lot, ballet. I really like hula. What else? Great lover of music. I did have like a jazz and blues band for a little while here and there, kind of off and on. So I like to sing that sort of like bluesy style, and sometimes play a little bit. Been teaching myself how to play the ukulele, but don't worry, I won't be torturing anyone with that anytime soon. Just my cat.
Now, I would expect you to be playing the ukulele because you're in Hawaii, but the blues stuff is interesting to me. Is there anything that I could see online that where I could see you performing blues music?
No, not really, actually. This is in the early 2000s, I think, you know, when people still had to like take the digital camera and then put the SD card something. And, you know, so I think that kind of cut down on the footage, which probably maybe might be a good thing, depending on how on or off key I was. But yeah, there really isn't a lot, unfortunately. I suppose it just exists purely within people's memory now.
Okay.
But I am actually, like, I'm going to be doing a little bit of singing at an upcoming gig, which is kind of neat. If your listeners like Hawaiian music, Uncle Willie K is a prolific Hawaiian musician. And unfortunately, he's been battling cancer. So right now, my friends, Casey, whose band Kings of Spade is just, they're an amazing, amazing local band. They're just fully rock and roll, amazing vocals, guitar, everything. They're just great. They're working on a fundraiser for Willie K. And basically, it's going to be on May 18th at this club called The Republic. And I'll be there, and I'll actually be singing my In Excess Michael Hutchence Need You Tonight cover, which should be fairly sexy if I can pull it off.
I hope I get to see a video of that.
Yeah. Or, you know, if you want, you could just fly in.
I know that too. I won't
just
be
for the night, you know.
I know, really. I would love that. I wish I had baller status enough to do that, you know.
I unfortunately don't. Like, yeah.
I will be celebrating my 50th in Hawaii. I'll be going to Maui.
Oh,
so, but yeah,
really?
Yeah, but I'll be in Maui.
When?
So not until September.
When will you be in Maui?
Yeah, not until September. So
September. Well, there's a lot of fun stuff going on in Maui too. But
yeah, I'll send you a note. We'll see if we can.
Cool.
We can do a meetup or something.
Yeah. Happy 50th in advance.
Thank you.
Like a great celebration.
Yeah. Believe it or not, I am not anxious or have any kind of midlife crisis thing happening about it. I'm actually like, I'm at peace with it. I, you know, when I turned 30, I had this like early midlife crisis thing, and you know, I don't know why I freaked out so much, because I just turned 30, but maybe it's because I wasn't in my 20s anymore. I don't know.
But, yeah. Well, I hope you'll note that you have told me your age a couple times.
I know.
And I have remained completely
I'm not going to ask. I know better than
because
that.
Because I am I am a firm and gorgeous 27 years old.
I believe it.
For the past however many years. Don't tell.
I won't say anything.
No. But you know what? I do think, like, you know, there is always, and this is kind of an interesting thing about burlesque. I think you had asked earlier about, you know, how is burlesque now compared to the older times?
Yeah, yeah.
And that is one thing that really does stick out to me and, you know, everybody, I think, is that, you know, burlesque in the older times, I mean, it has a very actually old tradition within the Italian theater. Mm-hmm. The original burlesque was a, you know, commedia dell'arte of making fun of or skewing situations or politics. So that's the, you know, kind of the inception. American burlesque, as you think of it with the girls, with the tassels and all of that, I think that era seems a lot more engineered towards the male gaze and towards the access or lack of access that red-blooded American men at that time had to visual stimulation, because, you know, at that time there was not a widespread access to pornography or anything like that. So men, in order to see these bodies that they want, you know, be appreciative of at the time, would have to go to these shows to see them.
Right.
And so I think not only was it, you know, it was fantastic and beautiful, and I'm not denigrating certain parts of it, but I do think that, you know, the beneficiaries, especially financially, were certainly in most cases not the dancers, and then more of the men who were kind of running the show.
Right.
That's not completely, you know, that's not across the board. There were some women who were very smart, and Gypsy Rose Lee was a great, you know, she was very capable, a great businesswoman. But I do think the biggest difference from then to now is the fact that burlesque now seems to be something more more actually for the female gaze. You know, a larger percentage of our audiences are female.
Yeah.
And it seems to be centered more around the creativity and freedom of expression.
Yes.
And less about the overtly sexual thing, which is not, I don't think, is bad either. I just think everything has, you know, everything has its time and its place. And sometimes that can be within the same show. But I can see that, you know, when people are performing, it seems like they're trying to get a point across or tell a story or something along those lines, more than just admire me, which is also fun too.
Yeah.
But so now it seems like those are options that performers have versus, you know, before it was, yes, you have to, you know, look a certain way, have this kind of body, only ever dance around with these kinds of props or, you know, and that does play into kind of the age thing that you were just talking about. And that, you know, that is one thing that I think is really cool about burlesque and the burlesque community, is that, you know, at places like Beehoff or different other things, they will have burlesque legends come up and perform. They have this community has a deep respect for the people who came before them. And I think that the younger people involved in burlesque also realize that you don't have to be any certain age to perform, nor to look good. It's all a matter of perspective and also opinion. You know what I mean? Sometimes people are going to find something hot and sometimes they're not, but the next person will or won't, you know?
So I think
in that way, I think burlesque has given a lot of people freedom to find within themselves what they find appealing or sensual or funny or entertaining and put that on display regardless of, you know, anything that society may say is not popular or not.
Sure.
I don't know. You know. Yeah. People are just a little more able to cast off whatever bonds might be limiting them and be able to be, you know, their truthful selves. mm-hmm. which I think is really neat.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
Yeah.
This episode is brought to you in part by Steadfast Pomade. Steadfast Pomade is a strong-holding, medium-bodied, water-based styling product for men and women, which leaves your hair looking slick, neat, and shiny with a clean, fresh scent. Its unique formula allows you to easily restyle your hair throughout the day and washes out with ease. Steadfast Pomade is American-made and veteran-owned. Available in original and anchor hold. Get yours today at steadfastpomade.com. Tame the waves and keep it steadfast. This episode is also sponsored by the Tiki Tea. Founded in 1961, the Tiki Tea is a family-owned and operated tropical drink bar practicing the lost art of exotic cocktail mixing. Come try their house specialty, the Ray's Mistake, a delicious concoction of botanic liqueurs, passion fruit, gin, and rum for only $6 on Wednesdays until 9 p.m. The Tiki Tea is located at 4427 Sunset Boulevard in Hollywood, California. For more information, check out their website, tiki-ti.com. The Tiki Tea, Ground Zero for tropical drinks.
Okay, I want to get back to some of these other questions that I had for you. You know, you're living in Hawaii, and I think that a lot of people want that to be a place where maybe that would be their ideal place to live. How do you feel about that? If you could live anywhere in the world, is there any other place that it would be? Do you have a dream destination, or is it Hawaii?
Yeah, it is, actually. I mean, I feel like that's actually kind of a boring answer, but, you know, it kind of goes back to that blessing and the curse thing that I was saying earlier. When you're born here, I think that there really is a part of, you know, your essence, or, you know, not to get all esoteric or whatever, but your mana, your spirit, that is here. And so I feel that connection very strongly, you know, just from being local and also from, you know, being Hawaiian and my just having all my family here. So when I do travel, I enjoy it so much. You know, I love seeing new places and stuff, but my heart is definitely here. And I always sort of long to, you know, to return to Hawaii. So I don't think I would move someplace else to live, but I certainly would not mind, like, you know, extended stays in beautiful places like, I don't know. I loved Europe. I thought, of course, you know, France was great. I've always really wanted to go to the Amalfi Coast in Italy. I love, like, country western music and Dolly Parton, so would love to go check out Dollywood one day. Just some random things like that.
Okay. Yeah, those answers surprise me, to be quite honest with you.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the Europe part doesn't. The Europe part doesn't because...
Yeah.
I, you know, of course, that's a very desirable place for a lot of reasons. But the country music, I just didn't peg that with you. So that's... See, learn something
bizarrely every day. Enough, Hawaii has like a weird... sort of cowboy culture, not as strong here in Honolulu as on the neighbor islands, but the Parker Ranch on the Big Island was one of the very biggest ranches in the United States for a super long time. So we had these Hawaiian cowboys who are called Paniolos,
right?
And they were the Hawaiian cowboys, so that facet sort of leaked into a little bit of like local culture. And so there's a lot of like country western music, rodeos, the Makawao rodeo.
Yeah.
So I think I just kind of associate that with some fun young kid times on Maui.
That makes sense. Know? Okay. Okay, yeah. So next question. If you were a millionaire and you could do whatever you wanted to do every day, what would that be? And it doesn't have to be philanthropic. You can be selfish.
Well, I guess I'll give like the philanthropic answer first and then the selfish answer second.
Okay.
If I were a philanthropic person, I would put a lot more research and funding into medical exploration for things like antibiotics, and also, of course, in, you know, environmental preservation, because I really do think that we need a lot of help in those respects.
Especially in the islands.
Yeah. I wonder where garbage patch.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Where does all the trash go from all the people that live there? Right. And it's not even just the people, it's the tourists. Yeah. Because, you know, if you have 1 million people that live on that island, you have the trash of I don't know how many more just because of people coming in that don't live there. Right. Mm-hmm. Like in the town that I live in, you can manage it to the population of the people that live here. Because we don't have this influx of visitors every day that generate and leave trash behind.
Literally, you know? Millions of people using the sewers and flushing the toilets. And I mean, you know, it's very, I think, it's definitely an equation, you know what I mean? But we have a tendency to get kind of creative with our trash. I think that's as much as I should go into.
Okay.
Nothing nefarious, but I mean, I think we've actually shipped some of it off to different places.
That's not unusual. That's what a lot of other small countries do as well. Yeah, they can't manage their trash.
Yeah.
Okay, what would be the selfish answer if you
the selfish one?
If you were a millionaire,
would probably be playing pranks on people I like. Like, literally just, and it's not nothing mean, or maybe not even just the world. I just would like to make the world more surreal in a kind of a good way. Maybe every once in a while, something a little spooky, you know, but put it this way. I grew up with a lot of siblings and in my family, the way that you demonstrate love is your sheer commitment to terrifying and putting the fear of God into your younger siblings.
There you go.
I crouched in an armoire for 45 minutes.
Really?
Once, just so I could spring out at my younger
brother.
Oh my
God.
And frighten him.
Oh, that's
funny. I can't believe
I'm
telling the story, but you know what? It's fine. So put it this way. You know what happens when you crouch for 45 minutes?
You start cramping.
Your legs fall asleep.
Yeah.
No, they just go dead.
They just go dead.
So the intended effect of springing out of the closed doors of the armoire in a frightening pose was lessened at the fact that I literally fell forward onto my dead, numb legs, hitting my face on the floor.
Oh,
and just
no.
Sort of remained in a pile groaning as my younger sibling just like walked into the other room as if this was something that, you know, see every day, which at that time it probably was, you know.
Well, you tried.
Did I give you any
A for effort?
Yeah. Thank you. I tried.
There you go.
Never a dull moment.
Never a dull moment. Okay. Next question.
So that's what I would do.
If you could have any superpower, what would it be? I know what my answer is.
Okay, you tell me yours. What is yours?
My answer is that I could eat whatever I want without getting fat.
That's so... I would not have expected that.
Right?
That's very healthy of you.
Well, see, I didn't even think about the health benefit from that because that's not to say that my cholesterol could still be high or...
Or something
else, right? Because if I'm eating poorly...
Okay, I know.
Okay.
The ability to transform into any object or thing or...
Okay.
You know, kind of like that one girl that she can, like, turn herself into different stuff, you know? I just think it would be really funny to, like... go meet your friends and right before they walk up, turn into a mailbox, you know, and then they'd be like, stop being a mailbox and you just don't say anything, you know? And then it gets to the point where it's like ridiculous. And they're like, listen, it's been 15 minutes.
You're still a mailbox.
I know you're not a real mailbox. Like, and then they leave and you just stay, you keep staying because you're committed, you know? Yeah. Whatever.
That's a fun one.
I think something like that.
Okay. Now, how about this one? If you could travel in time, would you go forward or backward? And why?
Definitely backwards.
Yeah,
definitely
I think that would be the popular answer. That would be my answer.
Why? I don't even have to say it. You guys know what's going on in the world.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I don't want to get dystopian, but who wouldn't want to go to like the under the sea enchantment dance? I just think it would be much more quaint to do the Back to the Future type of thing than possibly see what Skynet has in store for us within the next, like, you know, futuristic cyborg war. Doesn't really sound as cool as
You know, it's funny you say that, because I think most people think the future is bleak. And going back in time, we can correct a lot of the things that we wish we could do over, right? Everyone wants a do-over button, right?
Sure. Yeah, you know, I mean, not to get, like, deep or whatever, but I do, it's like, I do agree. I think, like, to put it in, like, you know, quote-unquote nerd terms, like, the Force. I believe in something that is similar to that. And I do feel like lately, because of, I'm sure, many different reasons, both environmental, political, all of that stuff, everybody across the board, you know, whatever your political or anything like that affiliation, it just seems like everyone has been kind of feeling like a little bit of a disturbance in the Force, you know?
Sure.
And so that's what I think is kind of like, you know, why most people, they do want to like go back and just be like, okay, you know,
what can
we do to, you know, try to make this all better? But, you know, also humans, like, I think that things are cyclic. And so sometimes things seem dire, and that's actually when the best moments, that's when people really pull out all the stops, and when you see, you know, what we're made out of. So hopefully it can be an opportunity, you know, for us to like get our stuff together.
Okay, so what about this one? If you could have dinner with anyone living or dead, who would it be?
Can it be like a bunch of people?
Sure.
Okay.
And I'll even expand this. They don't even have to be real.
Oh my gosh.
It could be something like a character in a movie. Like, I would love to hang out with Ferris Bueller. I think that would be fun. Yeah, right. But I'd also like to meet Bruce Lee.
Oh, that's cool.
Right?
Yeah, so. I bet he would have been like really like, okay. Well, it would definitely be a dinner party, and I probably could like just keep calling you every week and just add to this list.
Okay.
But off the top of my head, Nikolai Tesla.
Oh, that's a good answer.
David Bowie.
Okay.
Damn. Prince, of course.
Yeah.
Like Mae West.
Okay.
Because she just must have been, I don't know, she seemed really just sharp and hilarious. Oscar Wilde, also another one. So like witty and cutting and
yeah.
I don't know. I think it would be interesting to also like be able to talk to people who were in the Hawaiian monarchy, you know, especially towards the later era, like King David Kalakaua or, you know, Queen Liliuokalani. Like it would just be fascinating to be able to like to talk to them. Yeah. So, I don't know. I would love that. Like, it sounds so fun to be able to, like, have a historical dinner party. Although, wouldn't it be funny if, like, they ended up just being, like, dicks? I always imagine.
There's got to be.
South Park where they, like, summon Edgar Allan Poe and he's just, like, this super depressed, like, goth, like,
right.
lame. So I can kind of see, like, you know, that's the thing. It's like you don't want to get too close to your idols, because if you find out they're not what you thought, then
there is some truth to that statement that says you never meet your heroes or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
You just get disappointed.
I fully agree with it.
Yeah. Yep. I've experienced it. So
it's like how people's faces just look crestfallen when they have a conversation with me, you know, because they're like, oh, man. This whole
she
time.
Was so disappointing.
Yeah, there we go.
Well, I've had so much fun talking to you. And
me too.
We have to do this again sometime.
Yeah, I would love it. Like, thank you so much for having me. This is great. And I really, you know, love the podcast and love what you do.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. Before we wrap up, Is there mm-hmm. anything that we can promote for you? What is the future of Miss Violetta Beretta?
Oh, boy. There's a lot of stuff. The main big one is, of course, the Hawaii Burlesque Festival.
Okay.
That's going to be the 7th annual Hawaii Burlesque Festival. So it's been 7 years. I can't even believe it. Like, of just incredible fun, amazingly talented, you know, both local and feature performers. So this year, it's going to be, we have a bunch of different shows. They're multi-island. And right now we have HBF on the Big Island, and that will be on September 7th over at the Palace Theater in Hilo. We're looking at doing a Maui show, but that is not confirmed yet. But definitely we will be having our Oahu show, and that's two nights, and that's on the 14th and 15th over at the Doris Duke Theater. So Hawaii Burlesque Festival, 7th annual, September 14th and 15th, Doris Duke Theater.
If they want to buy tickets to that.
You know, right now our ticket links are not up. We will probably begin selling tickets at the beginning of next month. But if they want any information, we'll be releasing a lot of neat stuff about the performers, our featured acts, just all kinds of things. And they can go to www.HawaiiBurlesqueFestival.com for information, or they can follow us on social media. We have, you know, all the stuff. We have a Twitter.
Okay.
We have an Instagram. We have a Facebook. We even have a Pinterest.
Okay.
So that is the big thing. And then I'll also be flying over to Maui, actually, in the beginning of June to participate in a really neat, what I think is going to be a week-long event. The show is called Cyberlesque, but it's a part of this overall festival called Art Mix, and that's going to be at the Maui Arts and Cultural Center, the MAC, and that happens on June 9th, and the Cyberlesque show happens on Friday, June 1st. So I'll be over in Maui for that, and then that Willie Kay fundraiser that I talked about at the Republic
on
May 18th with Kings of Spades. And that's going to be, I mean, that's going to be an epic show. There's just, it's a whole, like, huge block of rock from different eras. And it's for a great, great cause. Busy month, actually.
Awesome.
But thanks, you know, so much for letting me plug all my stuff.
Of course,
so if you're in
course.
The Honolulu area, come on down.
Sounds great. And I wish I could be there for some of that. Maybe I can. So, because some of those dates are still out.
Yeah, well,
future.
Let's talk about September later, because I think you may actually end up being in town for some things.
Oh, very cool. Awesome.
Yeah.
Are there any other social media links that we'd like to share with our listeners?
Yeah, I would actually love that. You can get in touch with me or find out more about the Hawaii Burlesque Festival by following us on Twitter. That's, you know, twitter.com/HIBurleyFestival. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/HawaiiBurleyFest. Instagram.com/HI_BurleyFestival. And so connect with us that way or me, and always like to meet and make new friends. So please come be our friend.
Awesome. Well,
yeah.
I can't thank you enough for spending some time with me and telling me about all this fun stuff that you have your hands involved in. You're a busy person.
No, you know what? I'm just going to say, like, this has been so much fun. And I really, like, it's been an honor. Thank you. And, you know, we're all busy. So hopefully
we just
calm down every once in a while and listen to a nice podcast like yours.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
Hey, pour a tiki drink and
there you go.
Which is what I like to do when I listen to you.
Thank you so much,
podcast.
Violetta. And we will talk with you again soon. And for our listeners out there, if you want to leave a shout out for Violetta, or if you have any questions, comments, or guest suggestions for any future episodes, check out our Facebook group page, Inside the Desert Oasis Room. You can also follow us on Instagram at Polynesian Pop, or check out some of the previous episodes on the website, desertoasisroom.com. Cheers, everyone. Aloha. And
aloha.
See you next time.